You are listening to Season 5 of My Dad's Podcast, My Black is Transnational, a podcast about blackness and reconnecting back to our native homelands. Find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Check us out on YouTube. You can follow us on Instagram or blacktransnational.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of My Black is Transnational. My name is Dr. Kalechi Bay Lamberts, and coming up on this episode, I get the opportunity to talk to somebody I've been meaning to talk to and wanted to talk to for a long time. His name is Tony Gill, and he is the producer for NBC Sports Chicago and the Ringer Podcast Chicago, if you're familiar with those platforms. We get a very interesting conversation about his upbringing, his cultural experiences, his family background, and we talk about his desire, or even lack thereof, to be transnational. But before we get into that, let's go through our formalities. If this is your first time listening to the My Black is Transnational podcast, you can find this podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, Spotify, Google, Anchor, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, you can find this here. Please be sure to like, rate, and review the podcast. We always use your feedback for tailoring our episodes and content for your ears. You can also find us on social media. We're available on Instagram at Black Transnational Podcast. You can follow me, the host, at BlackTransnational_. You can also find us on Twitter at MBTransnational. And you can also check out our website at www.blacktransnational.com. That's a one-stop shop. You get everything you need to know about this show and the guest, and you can connect with them, and you can even listen to episodes from previous seasons if you choose not to use the other aforementioned platforms. All right, so this episode was a very unique one, and I want to get into it really quickly before we jump into the conversation. I was very fortunate to just be able to get in touch with Mr. Gill, who I've been listening to and been a fan of his work and watched his career grow as a producer from 670 to Score, which is a radio sports radio station in Chicago where I grew up. And just being able to have an opportunity to talk to him about sports and the rise of African immigrants in sport, I really wanted to dig into his background and learn about his culture as an African American. And it was very interesting in our pre-production conversation, just talking about his interests and desires to connect to Africa, his marriage to someone who's from India, and just learning how his future, and even with the expectation of his child who is now born, you know, congrats again, Brother Gill, you know, just kind of seeing how his life is essentially going to change culturally and what does that mean, right? Being connected to his roots, or just learning about his roots and what does that mean for his daughter and her multicultural background. And I thought we had a very rich conversation about just the cultural experiences. We talk a little bit about the tension or lack thereof between African immigrants and Black Americans. And then we talk about the relationship between African immigrants and Black Americans. We talk about how it ties into sports, the emergence of Blackness in sports and the cultural diversity of Blackness in sports now. And so I thought we had a very fun conversation. And again, I'm very grateful to Mr. Gill for taking the time to just connect and interact with, you know, his busy schedule. So this was a pleasure for me to be able to actually talk to somebody that I've listened to and experienced your work for a huge portion of my life as a sports fan. So, I hope you all enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And so without any further ado, here's my conversation with Mr. Tony Gill. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. Welcome to My Black is Transnational. And I have on here today the pleasure of talking with someone that I've been meaning to talk to and never thought I'd actually get the opportunity to talk with. So it's been a great pleasure to have on here sports media mogul. am I reaching, bro? Nah. To me, you know, someone that I've listened to, I mean, since, what, 2015? You've been in it doing 670. And I've been listening to 670 since I've been 11. So, you know, being able to have an opportunity to talk with Tony Gill here, who's the producer for the podcast on NBC Sports, and also the producer for The Ringer, the Full Go podcast. Also, you still sports adjacent? also as well, right? So just, I mean, doing all things podcast, doing all things sports, been, you know, I got a huge following and I'm one of those followers. And so to have the opportunity to have you here and just come on the show in the midst of everything you got going on with pending fatherhood and everything. So thank you so much, Tony, for jumping on the show. Whitney Young and Revis High School alum. And yeah, man, thanks for joining us.
Oh, of course, of course. Thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, and so really quickly, I know I've just given you a quick intro, but I always allow my guests to talk a little bit about just themselves, background, right? On My Black is Transnational, we love to talk about your cultural background and experiences as a Black person, and then we'll get deep into the other conversations, especially in regards to your profession and everything like that.
So, born and raised in Chicago. Southsider, even though I currently reside on the west side.
Okay.
Grew up West Englewood.
Okay.
Was my neighborhood before we moved. And, you know, both my parents raised in the church, still attend. Church is a big part of my life and what I do and who I am. Huge influences from there. And I just, you know, my father is a big sports guy and I love sports because of him. Just sitting down, watching, listening to him talk about sports with my uncles or my godfather, where they just get so excited and animated when they're talking about whatever sport it was, basketball, football, baseball. And I would just be able, because I was the oldest. I'm the oldest of four children. I have two younger brothers and a youngest sister. And so I was a part of a lot of adult conversations in terms of just, look, it was just me and my dad for a little bit and just hanging out and just listening to him talk about sports and things of that nature. And it kind of gave me an ear of, oh, this could be fun. Like, this is when I had the most fun with my dad, and to be able to change that and turn that into a career that I have and something that we can forever bond over, me and my dad. Yeah. It feels good. It feels good knowing that, you know, he's proud of me, proud of what I'm doing. And it always is going to connect us in that way, is sports. So, that's kind of just a short, you know, summary of my background and, where I come from.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you said Englewood. Yeah. So I came up on 79th and so Chatham area. Okay. So 79th in Indiana. So I'm still there right now. And so, like, so you mentioned growing up and being into sports and your father and your uncles and your brothers, but like, what was growing up in Englewood like for you at that time? I mean, other than, you know, sports maybe being an escape, but like, what was it like for you, you know, being in that community, born and raised?
It's maybe I had a little bit of a, you know, a different, growing up period in West Englewood, because when, you know, my grandfather, he started the our church right there on 61st and Marshfield, so in between Marshfield and Ashland, and they have been there for already, you know, 30 years or so. You know, everybody knows me, so it's like, I couldn't get in too much trouble because everybody knew my grandfather. So any trouble that I would get into, or, you know, or almost got into, people were like, I know your granddad, you know, so that would kind of, you know, stop, you know, me from doing any malfeasance or causing mischief around the neighborhood. But, you know, I loved it. It was a fun time. You know, it was relatively, you know, small neighborhood. And we live right next door to the church, right off on 61st and Ashland. So, I mean, we had a lot of good times there, you know, learned how to ride my bike, you know, that neighborhood, you know, many trips to the corner stores. It was fun. We stayed there until I was in the fourth grade. Okay. Before we ended up moving to 79th and St. Louis.
Okay. Okay.
before we moved there, and then I moved over there after that. But, you know, the church is still there. I'm still constantly over in that neighborhood, working in the community, doing things like that. So that strip of West Inglewood, and I know it's not like, you know, it's still the western parts of Inglewood, what traditional Inglewood was, but man, that street, that area is always going to be a part of me and what made me the man I am today. You know, it makes you to be a little bit streetwise, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you got to know what's going on. Facts. And always, you know, be looking around to see, you know,
head on a swivel, bro. Always.
What's the next move? Yeah, and you know, and it's not that, you know, you're worried about people, but you know, you always want to, you know, be aware of your situations and surroundings, and being able to pick that up, you know, fairly early from, you know, a young age. And then, you know, the life lessons that, you know, good father is supposed to teach, you know, a young man growing up in Chicago, you get to know about how the world works. And you know, even though you're in the area, you may be a little bit more privileged than others, because, you know, I grew up in a household with both parents, and a very involved father. So I knew a lot of my friends at that time, a lot of people didn't have that privilege. And on top of that, just more involved grandparents on both sides, and living next door to your grandparents. Like, how many people get that opportunity?
That is a privilege.
It's a blessing. And, you know, I don't take it for granted, you know, especially now with a child on the way for me. The involvement of grandparents and people and family being that available to you, despite of what neighborhood you live in, is so valuable and is so key to growing up. And I'm a success because of their teachings and their love and their care. And I knew that played a vital part in how I grew up. And I knew, and I know now, that, you know, everybody from Inglewood and West Inglewood may not have that same have that same privilege. And I understand that, and I'm grateful for it.
And I mean, when you talk about family and being able to have that some people consider it a luxury, right? Being able to have your parents available, grandparents, that support system, that village, right? And that was one of the reasons we moved back to Chicago, you know, just moved back from upstate New York, from Syracuse, because the kids, got three kids, and pandemic really, you know, emphasized and just really pronounced how much, you know, we needed to be around that village, that support system down the street, you know, compared to being able to just have your kids be able to grow up and know their grandparents and be involved and build that relationship. And it really allows them to also tap into their lineage, their roots to a certain extent, right? To kind of understand a piece of, you know, just who they are, built in based on your family. You can be able to talk to your grandpa about how your dad was when he was younger, your age, and you can kind of understand why certain things, why the apple doesn't always fall that far from the tree, right? Like, I'm gonna just tell you real quick, like, and I'll get back into my point, but like, my dad was here visiting from Nigeria. And, you know, this was the first time in like 5 years since the pandemic. He hasn't seen his grandkids. This is the first time he got to see, you know, his grandbabies and everything. But I also had an opportunity to interview and sit down and just talk with him, because it's been years. And it was very interesting to just talk with him about what life, like, what was happening in the moment that, like, I was born. Like, what were you doing? What happened? Right. For him to tell me that story of like, man, you know, I was at work and I get a call and, you know, I hear your mom's doing this and that. And, you know, you're 3 a.m. I see you. And then starting to hear little mannerisms, because like, my youngest daughter, she's like very loud crier, just very like a banshee, bro, like just very loud and shrieky, like cry. Right. And, you know, compared to like my son, like, who's not really like that. But I was telling him like, man, you know, what was I like? And he was like, you more like your little girl. Like, he cried. He was very annoying. And I was like, dang, like, that's, you know, the apple don't fall that far. Like, you can see that's karma, right? And so some people don't get that opportunity to find that out. You know what I mean? And so just in that point, I think about your up, like, what have you been able to learn growing up? It seems like West Inglewood and your grandfather making that a foundational piece of the Gill family. What were you able to learn growing up about your history, your lineage as a black man, as a black person growing up, were you able to get an opportunity to learn about your past, like where your peoples were from and your history behind that?
I mean, it doesn't go back that far. My grandfather on my father's side, he didn't know his real father. He knew that his father was in the army, and that was it. Everything he had known from his father was a mix of pieced information that he got from his mother, his uncle, not his blood uncle, but his aunt's husband, just some information from his grandparents who he had stayed with briefly. His grandparents on his mother's side. So his family was more of his history. Was more of the what do you get from, you know, lineage of American black slaves. You know, where homes weren't necessarily put together. His dad and his mom, I don't think they were together or anything. And he found out his father had passed because he was shot by a man who found out that my grandfather's father was seeing her.
Wow.
Yeah. Was seeing that man's wife.
Yeah.
And he shot him, and he could have patched himself together since he was in the army. He knew how to, you know, patch himself up, but he stood over him and watched him bleed out.
Wow.
Until he passed away. And you know, my grandfather was definitely a you know, one of one, where he had every excuse in the book to not be the upstanding man that he was. Yeah. But he didn't. He gave his life to Jesus Christ, and that changed his pathway forward, like forever. Through the church, he met my grandmother. Because she was in the church. They got married. Then they moved to Detroit, where they had my aunt. And then after, you know, job opportunities, you know, began to, they were part of that great migration. Job opportunities began to kind of swallow up in Detroit. He moved them to Chicago, where they had more children. My dad is the youngest of eight. He wasn't really supposed to be born. They told my grandmother after seven that, you know, if you had another, that not only would the baby die, but you would die as well. But you know, my grandmother had her personal relationship with the Lord as well. And she felt that she wanted to have another one, and thank God she did, because I would not be here. So they had my father, and you know, here I am. So that's kind of a short history for my father's, you know, lineage.
And this was all in the Midwest, or was this like, were they like, you know, out in the South and they migrated up north?
So they were in Mississippi. Mississippi was where I'm originally from, on both sides, actually. My parents, my grandparents on my mother's side, they're from Mississippi as well. So, you know, as you get older, you learn more and more of your family's history, you know, good and bad. And as you know, would know and imagine, a lot of trauma and a lot of pathways that you know, intersect to create where you come from. And I'm slowly learning all of those things. As we get older, it's very difficult to piece together the trauma and the history that makes up your family from the older generation, one, right? Because it's difficult to talk about sometimes. You know, and two, you know, people aren't ready just yet. To discuss until you're, you know, of age. And, you know, I'm in my 30s now, so, you know, I deserve a little bit of respect. And when I ask a question about some history or something like that, like, you know, I'm looking for a straight answer. I'm not a child anymore. Like, right. I can handle,
right.
you know, yeah, things. Likewise. So learning, you know, all your family history may not, you know, come at once, being, you know, a product of slavery and sharecroppers and things of that nature. But you slowly piece it together and you learn and you grow more. And that way you can, you know, pass it down to mm-hmm. the next generation. So you don't become, you know, uppity, or, you know, you always remain humble because yeah. you come from humble beginnings.
Yeah. 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 And it's interesting when you said Mississippi, you know, my wife, her family, I think her mom, my mother-in-law, all the way back to, I think it's Yazoo, Mississippi. And then my father-in-law is it's Alabama. I forgot mm-hmm. exactly where in Alabama. I want to say, it starts with a P, but I don't want to say the wrong thing. But it's interesting because when my wife and I, very similar, like having these conversations, you learn so much the older you get about your roots, right? And so it's to learn so much about your history and blackness and being African-American and the history tied to slavery. I'm curious as to then when your first exposure was to African immigrants who were not necessarily the descendants of slaves, but like newly fresh immigrants in your area, because it wasn't, I mean, I don't know, growing up, like in a lot of us were up north in the north side, and then we kind of found our way to the south later on as far as like African immigrants go. But I want to know when your first like experience was interacting with like a Nigerian or Ghanaian or someone from Belize or wherever the case may be. Like, when was your first experience growing up doing that?
I wasn't exposed to an African immigrant until I moved out of West Englewood to the Ashburn area, I think is what that small area is called. Mm-hmm. It's like a small area between like 79th and Kedzie. Like it's on along Southwest Highway, mm-hmm. but between like 79th and Kedzie and Cicero. Like it's a very small area. Yeah. Like around, if anybody knows Bogan High School, yep. that's kind of where that area is. I wasn't introduced until we moved over there, and I had a library teacher. Her name was Mrs. Wambugu. Yeah. And she was she wasn't a first generation. She moved over here with her husband.
Yeah.
From Africa. I can't remember what part of Africa where she was from, but that was my first kind of interaction with a black person that wasn't American black.
Yeah.
She was very poignant, very detailed. She was about, you know, her studies and wanted to show the importance of books, even though, you know, she didn't really get, you know, the chance or opportunity really, because, you know, you got a lot of different people from different backgrounds and different attention spans and yeah. Of an elementary school setting. So, but, you know, she had two children that also attended the school. And I, you know, at least in part from, you know, I didn't, you know, it's not like I had this like great relationship with, you know, mm-hmm. her, but she was my first kind of interaction with
yeah.
A person of true African origin that knew where she came from.
Yeah.
And she was, she was proud of that. She was proud of where, you know, she came from, and especially around Black History Month time, she was able to show and tell us, at least in some part, where, you know, where she came from and how she, you know, grew up. So that was kind of my first interaction with that.
Were there any like familial perceptions, like as far as like what your family perceived when you would talk with them or in the church, if there were there any perceptions about African immigrants or people who were originally from Africa and how they were viewed when you were growing up? Did you hear anything, any rumors, any like any type of stereotypes, anything like that?
Not really, or not anyone that I can remember. Okay. Yeah, I mean, not really, just to be honest, because we didn't have that many interactions.
Right.
With people of true African descent, direct African descent, I should probably say. I don't know. I mean, you did have I would have questions if my father, you know, knew of someone. But it wasn't like a real a point of conversation in in my house or anything. To me, I just kind of, well, they may be from somewhere else, but they're here. They're black like me. You know, they gotta, you know, deal with all the stuff that I gotta deal with. I truly didn't get a true sense of, or had a real connection with it until I got to high school with Whitney Young. There were so many different people from so many different backgrounds that, you know, you had to. Like, one of my friends, his name was Sean Akwamwa. You know, his family was from, you know, Africa. And there were other different people there where, you know, they were just the same as me, you know, trying to, you know, find their way in that space of high school life, and very well spoken and all other things that, you know, everybody else is trying to do. So I didn't really have a really, really true connection or conversation with somebody from Africa until I got to high school.
The reason I asked that is just because for me, like, coming up, I'm going to assume we're about the same age, or at least in the same generation. But like, for me coming up, being a young African immigrant, you know, it wasn't until later. For me, I was able to adjust a little bit better than some of my other peers who were, you know, African immigrants or even children of, because my accent wasn't thick then. Like, I was able to code switch. Right. And so for me, it was cool. But once you hear my name, once you see my attire sometimes, or you know you can kind of put the pieces together. But there used to be a tension, bro. Like, there was a tension that was very palpable among, like, black immigrants and African Americans, in terms of you know, we don't mess with them because they are looked upon as not good, right? The association of the negative perceptions of hip hop culture that was put in front of a lot of African first generation African immigrants who came here, how they perceived black people was not necessarily the most positive light based on how media portrayed them. And so for me coming up, it was also reversed in terms of how we were perceived as Africans. This perception of us living in huts and, you know, lions and jungles and all those things. Have you ever heard the term African booty scratcher?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, like, all those, right, which, you know, these are things that you're just like, man, like, okay, what's happening here? So I didn't realize it either. I was very similar to you, where I was like, okay, we're all black. We're all doing the same thing. We're all trying to make it, eat to live, and just trying to do our thing. It was, for me, I had to, you know, I didn't notice the intentional, and I don't know if it's from your end intentional, but for us, there was a little bit of an intentional separation and distancing, right, from one culture to another. And so I used to always feel that, man, like, if we just took some time to get to know one another, you know, it'd be cool. And as I got older, of course, I started to do more things independently. But even when I was younger, I had to go out of my way to really immerse myself in black history, right? I mean, reading books and really learning about the path, because the assumption was, right, African Americans are lazy, right? Because we come to this country as African immigrants, and we see you all are sitting here doing drugs, making music, doing all these things. We're coming here to work hard and take advantage of the opportunities that y'all not, right? And that was a message that was embedded in me initially, you know, coming up. But once I learned about black history and you really understood, like, the things that were in place, you know, it really opened my eyes, but a lot of others didn't. And I was curious about what your thoughts are regarding these different stereotypes and perceptions that each group lay on one another. And do you think, what is your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, I didn't have, you know, let's say it's like, I'm not gonna, like, you know, pretend like I knew, like, that tension was there growing up. Yeah. You know, I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest. But obviously in my adulthood, you look back on it and you think about, okay, what, there are differences, right? You know, from different in confidence, right? You're confident when you know where you come from, right? Mm-hmm. Where you know your history and you know it's built in. You know, there's a pride there that comes with that. And from the people here that are products of slaves, for everybody that doesn't already know the history, I guess it would cast we just look at the current state of situation, you would have a lot of assumptions, mm-hmm. About Black people in America and their circumstances. But there are reasons why that is. There are reasons why we are where we are today, as a, you know, group. Mm-hmm. And obviously, right, we've come a long way, right? You know, we got millionaires and you know, a couple billionaires, mm-hmm. Around, athletes, musicians, actors, like educators, like we've definitely, come a long way, but I guess my hope is, since there's been more conversation around, especially of late, the last couple presidencies, mm-hmm. That there's been, more understanding. I shouldn't even say understanding, because Florida, they just are trying to just outright not teach.
Florida is like, but Florida different, bro.
But that does tell me that people do know of the information, mm. of the truth. And at that point, they're just trying to deny the truth. Mm. So the truth is still getting out there. And people are still wanting to know, because there are people that don't want the truth, mm-hmm. In there. Mm-hmm. So that's still a reaction, mm-hmm. to the history.
Yeah.
And I hope that, the people, and not so much the establishments, but the people really continue to pass down, information, pass down history, mm-hmm. real life history. So, people can be more understanding, going forward. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy because I think about, even as you were describing your upbringing, I think about my perception is, man, like you kind of lived in a fairly insulated environment in terms of exposure,
yeah,
to African.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, mm-hmm. imagine, right. My wife, she literally told, mm-hmm. me, I hadn't seen or interacted with my first African immigrant until med school. Like, mm-hmm. that's incredible, right? You've gone 18 plus years of your life and not really knowing that there's another Black person that looks like you that may have these new, like, minor cultural differences or may perceive themselves, mm-hmm. as a different type of Black than you, right? And so, mm-hmm. as you're about to become a dad, man, and, I wonder, so what are you going to tell your kid in terms of their history, in terms of, because you're, I mean, I assume, I remember from our, talking before, mm-hmm. it's going to be a multicultural background, right? If I recall, yeah. mm-hmm. right? And so like, that's interesting for you. And I want to, mm-hmm. know like how you're going to, break that down when your kid is going to come to you, just like you went to your OGs and them, and say, hey, like, who am I? Where am I from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting. My daughter will be the first person of mixed culture, yeah. In our immediate family on my side. And I think it's going to be fun, and getting to explain to her that she has so much history and so much culture inside of her, yeah. From her mom and her dad. That she can fully embrace. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have to pick, one or the other. Like, she has both Black and Indian culture in her. Mm-hmm. And me and my wife, we, before we got married, I mean, it was part of our discussion, right? And it has to be. It
has to be, sure.
Because that's who we are, right? I'm proud of where I am and where I come from and my family and my roots, And she is as well. We come from both loving homes with loving parents and loving siblings and cousins and, you know, all these different in traditions, right? Like that she gets to experience, you know, all together and all at once on equal standing. And it's going to be great to embrace all of those things that is her. And I think she's going to have a great, I'm just projecting, but I think she's going to have a pretty fun life and pretty great life, because there's going to be so much family and love around her from both cultures.
Yeah. So are you, like, your wife is, where's your wife originally from?
She's from here. Her parents are immigrants from Hyderabad.
Oh, okay. India. Mm-hmm. So are they still heavily connected to India as well?
Yeah. They have land over there. They have family.
Yeah.
There that visit. They've recently gone back earlier this year for my brother-in-law, who's from India as well. They're very much heavily connected. My wife wants us to go. Wanted us to go, but the baby kind of set us back a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably set us back a year, but I plan to go, you know, eventually to see her family that's still over there. So they're very, very much still connected to where they're from.
Yeah, man. And so your daughter is going to be a transnational, right? You just connected to India and going back and forth because the mom is still connected. So I wonder for you, like, what is your interest level as far as connecting with Africa? Or leaving any country in the diaspora?
You know, it's funny. My wife really, because she knows where she's from. And she takes ownership of that and is happy and proud of that. And I am as well of where I'm come from. But I just don't know exactly where that is. I am happy with my present amount of information that I have. Where, you know, I know I didn't, you know, start in Mississippi, but for all intents and purposes, that's where my family
that's where started.
Was Mississippi. And then we know what happened from there, how they got there.
Yeah.
But she wants me to do the genealogy, you know, background test. And I've been kind of slow footing around it. But I think I may do it, you know, eventually, just so I can see that information and be able to have that. And because it, in all honesty, it is important, to know, she knows, she's also did the test despite knowing already, you know, where she, so it's really important
just to finalize it.
And for our daughter, it is going to be important for her, to know. That answer may not be good enough for her, where it's like, hey, we from Mississippi. You know, that may not, she may want to know more because she knows so much on her mother's side. Yeah. So because of all those things, more recently, I've become more interested in my African roots more than before, just because it, when you are, you know, kind of focused on, you know, being successful or, you know, making a stable life for yourself or for your family, those things kind of tend to kind of go by the wayside. Because of day-to-day life and, you know, wanting to provide and all these other things, that it becomes, you know, less important. And on top of, right, like, do I really want to go back to and learn the traumas of my, you know, relatives from back in the day, or relive that? And I don't know if I was mature enough or strong enough to, you know, handle that information, knowing what's back there.
Yeah.
Right, knowing what I'm gonna have to wade through the waters of that information, it's tough. It's tough, and it's just easier. And honestly, it's just easier just to not look and go on with your life and try and make the best life you can for your family today. But I know that eventually, you know, I'm going to be more diving into maybe when I retire or something, that will be a focus of mine of just trying to truly do a deep dive.
Yeah.
But I will say I'm now with my daughter coming soon that I'm that interest engine is definitely revving up.
Yeah. And fatherhood will do that, because you start to think about your legacy, right? And you, because that question is going to come, right? At some point in time, your kid is going to ask you, who am I? Who are we? And what is it that makes us who we are? But you know, one thing I say, bro, Tony, is, you know, I know people are very keen on wanting to find out exactly. And I'll just share my philosophy for the sake of being just being full transparency. I think personally, I just encourage brothers who are curious about going to Africa to just go. Like, pick a country and make it yours if that's something you're interested in. But my thing is, first go and see what it's like for people who look like you, who want to welcome you home. Because there are lots of places there. There's Ghana, there's Nigeria. I would definitely say Ghana. Nigeria's a little wild, but Ghana for sure. Nigeria's, I always tell people, go to Ghana first. for example, right, we talking about Inglewood. If people visiting from Chicago, most people, you won't be like, go to Inglewood first. You'd probably be like, you know, you might want to check out, like, Michigan Avenue. You know, go to Michigan Avenue first and see what you, right. You know, that's kind of how I look at Nigeria. Like, you want to go to Ghana, Accra first. They're definitely more tourist friendly initially. Mm-hmm. But my point is that, like, historically, it's been one of those things where, again, we as African immigrants, we pick and choose where we want to go and reestablish our lands. And the whole point of this podcast is really about getting people to understand that, like, you have, especially our brothers and sisters who are African Americans, you know, historically, your ancestors were involuntarily brought here. And now you have an opportunity to voluntarily, you know, reconnect back if you choose to really figure out what's going on. And there's so many, like, really dope things now. Everybody has this thing called, and you can check it out in your free time, like Doorway of Return. And it's a very powerful thing. And it's, even for me, like, it's something that, even though I'm not necessarily African-American by identity, but I definitely associate because of my upbringing and my experience and my immersion in history. But, like, to be able to sit and have conversations with people who say, look, man, we're sitting on this beach, and I'm looking out of the water, and I realize that, like, the people who are standing next to me, I really don't know. They might actually be my relatives, but I couldn't really tell because of what happened, right? Like, because, and you have to sit there and say that I might. And so we get the chance to welcome somebody that actually really is your kin, right? And and these people are welcoming you to say, come, you're home, right? And this is your home. You are welcome. Look at us. We see each other. We embrace each other and say, hey, look, there are opportunities for you. And I think internationally, I want to raise awareness about how valuable African Americans are globally. The impact, like, it's a story, man. And you know, biblical stories, you know, the story of Joseph, right? Like, you understand that coming back with, you know, a king, like, you, if you understand the power of what happened, being sold off, and then to create what African Americans have created, that can the leaders, the move, the millionaires, the athletes, the people that really essentially move and shake the world. I mean, there's some historical things that we can say make us, that, you know, we've been disposable by systemical practices, but if without Black people, this world doesn't turn the way it do. That's how I feel, right? And so the impact. And now people, hip-hop culture, everything Black, real Black, African-American Black, is embraced and bought and purchased. The idea of cool is about y'all. And y'all invented that. You know what I mean? That and that's something that's sold all over the world. And people want to make it what it is, but you know what it is, right? And so I think about, man, now y'all have an opportunity to come back to a space where people who look like you want to see that, and you can show them, like, this is who we are, we're back. And so I want that for my brothers and sisters. I want them to at least have the option to be able to have, instead of just being forced in a one-way direction to America, but you have an opportunity to say, okay, look, I want to go back. I want to invest. I want to do other things. I don't want to have to just relegate myself to feeling like I have to just be here, and this is only where, if I choose to, cool. But I also want people to know that there's another part. You can have, other people got other homes, summer homes. You can go, and you should have the world, the opportunity to also be global citizens, because other people feel like they can do that. And I feel like, you know, we should be able to as Black people as well. So, bro, if that's something that you are looking at doing, I strongly support and encourage, and whatever I can do to help assist in that, you know, for you and for your own personal knowledge, but also for your baby girl on the way. I want to assist in that any way. And so, you know, I appreciate you sharing that and being transparent. And even just thinking about, like, I was going to mention and transition a little bit into sports because I know that's your arena. And so, I mean, that's something like, I saw an article that led me to one day interview Sam Acho, who I know you're familiar with. But it was an article talking about the potential rise of, like, African or children of African immigrants, if not African immigrants, in sports. And bro, you, I know you're really, I mean, you tap into all sports, but I know you're really heavy in the NBA. And like, if you really take a step back and really look at the amount of African immigrants in sports now, or even children of African second generation, it's immense, right? And so, I mean, they're stars now. Ayo, like Giannis is Nigerian, right? You got Bam, you got, like, I can name them all. Vincent, like, you know, there's so many people that are in the sports now that are of these, you know, diasporic descent, right? And so I'm curious as to what your thoughts are about this, because not only now are they just, you know, okay, they have the name, but they're also bringing the culture into the mix. They're bringing it into the sports, right? NFL Africa, Cleveland Browns are doing a great job, really, and bringing into the Ghanaian, you know, demonstration. Minnesota Vikings, you know, with having a Ghanaian GM, right? And so, like, there's so much more of that diasporic pride that's being shown. Even your own colleague, Jason Goff, right? Like, he talks about his, you know, I'm going to Belize. That's where his front, that's where his people's from. He's going there every summer, every time you're talking about it, right? Or even, you know, showing it on Instagram. So, like, I'm curious as to what your thoughts, now that you're in this profession, you're seeing it, and you're seeing this diversity in Blackness, you know, just rear its head. Like, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, sports in the truest sense is the great equalizer, where if you're talented, no matter where you're from or how you started, people will find you and they will want you to play for them. And it's one of the only spaces, equal opportunity spaces, in the world is in sports. And I think, you know, that's probably why I gravitated towards it. One, as a child, because if you're good, you're going to get picked, you know, and people will embrace you, you know, in that manner. And, you know, the same thing when in sports coverage, if, you know, you're entertaining and, you know, people like you, you know, you're respectable to people. People want you around. They want to interview you. Like in this case, they want you to work for them. So it's really an equal, as close as you can get to an equal opportunity. And the NBA, if we're using that as definitely a an example of that, I think it is. One, I think the NBA has made an effort to be a worldwide sport, to make it as easy as they can for people to pick up a basketball and a hoop and find some place to play with some friends. And we're seeing the effects of that now. We're seeing what the Dream Team did, you know, for the future of basketball. You know, across the world and specifically in Africa, you just recently, right? Luol Deng,
NBA Africa
and South Sudan, right? They're gonna have the opportunity to play in the Olympics. They will qualify for the Olympics. Like,
crazy.
They just kind of started like a few years ago.
Man,
that's crazy. That's insane. And then you have a 2-time MVP in Giannis, who obviously hails from Greece, but is a product of African immigrants. Joel Embiid, even though he's not, you know, playing for his home country, he chose to play for Team USA. He still has roots there. He is known as an international player. you really see the impact of what happens when you give everybody an opportunity.
Yeah.
An opportunity could be, you know, be difficult or more difficult for some than others. But if you are truly talented, people will find you no matter where you are.
Yeah.
In sports, and it's the best thing about sports,
yeah,
is you're gonna get a different spin. We haven't seen a player like Giannis before. We would have never seen it if basketball never got to,
yeah,
you know, his home.
Yeah.
We've never seen a player like Embiid who's pushing three bills, but that can step out and shoot the three and still have so much finesse a part of his game. We've never gotten that if basketball didn't reach where, you know, he was from.
Yeah.
I mean, you got DeAndre Ayton and Tim Duncan from, yeah, you know, the Jamaica, yeah, and the islands.
Yeah.
So, like, on the diaspora, basketball is reaching, you know, everywhere, and sport is reaching everywhere. We know how popular soccer, you know, football is, you know, around the world, that everybody plays it. And, you know, you see the me and Jason Goff, when we talk about soccer or international soccer, we look at, you know, these teams, France, and it's like, black people
all African, bro. They all African. Right,
Germany, or, you know, these other places.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all us.
Yeah.
This is all us, bro, you know, everywhere.
That's so the point, bro.
Sports has been a great equalizer, like, yeah, I mentioned at the beginning of this very long diatribe.
I keep talking.
But yeah, it's so good to see, because it is entertaining, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to know that we, or the level of play in each various sport, is being raised because of the pool is being widened,
mm-hmm,
right? There's more competition. That means people got to step up their game to be better, mm-hmm, because now it's not just a select group of people that you get to choose from. You get to choose from anybody around the world to draft for your various team, or, yeah, to sign to your various team.
Yeah.
And I hope that just continues to be the case, and I hope that continues to grow.
Yeah, I mean, NFL got their pathway program, OC Onyemura. What am I saying? Yeah, OC Onyemura. You know, and I should know that, he's Igbo. But OC's kicking off the NFL Africa thing, creating the pathways. Not every player from Africa has an opportunity to be, you know, at least a training camp. If they work hard, they get it, you know. And I think, man, everything you said, it was well said, bro, as far as we're everywhere. I mean, especially when we talk about blackness. And that's the crazy thing. So that's what hit me when we think about these black transnationalists, when it was like, you got all these black people in all parts of the world. But to some, they're all connected in some way back to Africa, or to some country in the diaspora that this is where I'm from. Black people in London, mm-hmm, from Jamaica, you know, they're from the islands, right? And so it's like there's that, we got the roots, but then y'all got the branches are everywhere, and they're creating impact all over the world, mm-hmm, in entertainment and sports, right? And man, the only piece is missing right now is baseball, bro. And that's, yeah, like, that's my dream. That's my, I love baseball. I'm a Sox fan. You don't got to talk about that. That's not the podcast, but like, but like, you know, born diehard Sox fan. And like, that was something that I always, outside of Akil Adu, he was the mm-hmm first one, the one in Detroit. But like, mm-hmm, that was always my dream. Like, I never, the only sport I played was baseball. Mama didn't let me play football. Mm-hmm. And basketball, I was only defense. Like, I couldn't shoot more. So, like, couldn't play. I love defense rebound, but I knew, like, but baseball was my sport, right? And so, mm-hmm, but I always realized that there weren't people who look like me, who talk like me, you know, except, you know, and then their issue, when we talk about people from, like, who are Latino, or from, you know, like, you know, Cuba, Puerto Rico, mm-hmm, or Dominican Republic, right? There's a different conversation how they view blackness, but yeah, like, so that was a piece that I always was like, man, I cannot wait until we have that potential breakthrough, because it'd be really interesting to see. And that's one thing I'm hoping that I can at some point in the future be able to contribute to, really creating more exposure to the game of baseball for like more African or black diasporan like athletes. Because I realized like once we get in that space, the issue of course, you know, with baseball is that like it takes time. Like, and people, mm-hmm. and when you're coming from, when you're you know, in the mud, and when you're trying to get out the mud, you don't really got that much time because baseball is an expensive sport, right? And you're in minor league, you ain't getting paid that much. You really got people at home you got to take care of. So the barriers in place really make it difficult. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that like that would be one potential, like that's what I'm like praying that I can be able to live to see is more African or just, you know, black diasporans like really making an impact in the game of baseball. Because I just don't see it for hockey. But like, I don't see that for hockey, bro. But yeah, man. So look, I appreciate the time you've taken already, man. More than enough. I know you're a busy man, and so again, I can't express enough how just my gratitude into just for you taking the time to do this and wrapping me for a little bit. But I do have one last question before we wrap up. So when it's all said and done, man, like you got you're encroaching new phases in your life. You just mentioned just how rooted you are and you know, you've been, had really positive black male influences. You've been exposed to sports, right? You've really been able to, you walk by faith. You're a man of God. And I want to know at the end of the day, with everything you're doing, what do you want your legacy to be?
I think that has changed more recently. I used to think about that a lot. And, you know, before when I was younger, I'm like, ah, man, I want to leave stuff here. And, you know, so I do a yearly kind of podcast. I don't really promote it, but just kind of like a tape conversations with people in my life that I can pass down to, you know, my daughter, she can listen to.
Likewise.
Stuff in that nature where I interview my father, and I want her, because she's only going to know old man version of me and my father. So I want her to hear in their own voices now while they're you know, poignant and smart and able to talk about things and their feelings in their, you know, relative primes. So she can always have that. And my children can always have that. And as well as, you know, the old man versions that she'll be introduced to when she's born. So I'm still doing that, and I'm still going to do that going forward. And I looked at that and I was like, well, that's not really important. Like the internet is gonna fade and all these other things are gonna fade, man. And the more I grow in my faith, man, I just want people to know that I'm a follower of Jesus, man. Any of that's nothing more that I can do, right? If I may not be the most famous person in the world, I may not have, you know, my name written, you know, in somebody's Hall of Fame, or I may not get a statue, you know, somewhere, but if I can introduce my children and people that know me and, you know, enjoy me, enjoy my work, whatever, I really want to point people to Jesus. That's it. That's it. That's what I want my legacy, you know, to be. And if I can pass that down, whatever, you know, my children decide to do with that, that's ultimately what I want to, because, you know, it's their choice in the end. I just want to point people to him. And I can't really ask for much more than that. I don't have a say so right after I'm dead of what people think about me or feel about me. I only can be the best, you know, person that I can be, and I only can do that through him. And ultimately that's kind of what I want. And the more I think about it, of how I used to think about, man, I need to attain a certain level of success so I can, you know, leave a bunch of stuff or leave a good name behind, it felt more vain to me. as I truly understood what mattered, and it felt more feeble, because people, you can imagine, right? Like, and the more I thought about it, it was like, it only takes like two generations, right? Once my kids have a kid, are they really going to care about what I did or, you know, who I was or things that make. So after my daughter was born, right, like, and she has her family, like, I'm not going to be brought up in, it'd be super selfish. Hey, make sure you mention me.
Right.
You know,
right,
you know, right, like, right, you right. know, they got their own lives
yeah.
to live.
Yeah.
So I can't really, I can't depend on my successes to be my legacy. And if that's all that there is of my legacy, I don't think that that's really a good legacy.
Yeah.
So the only thing that I can do, and the only thing that I want, is to point people to Jesus Christ, and that's it.
Mm. Yeah, that's real, bro. I appreciate that. And that is, you know, and you was, as you were saying that, I felt that, because when you talk about it being two generations, that is a real thing. Like, you're not that far removed from being a past thought, right? And mm-hmm. and so living in the moment, living today, and just like you said, doing your best to lead by faith and live by faith, and, you know, again, be a good representative and disciple of Christ, is that's one thing to behold, bro. So yeah, bro, thank you so much again, mm-hmm. for hopping on the show and really just and rapping with us. And I always wanted to, because again, on this podcast, it's I wanted to get a perspective of someone who is really new to the content of just, you know, talking about African immigrants, because I'm so deep mm-hmm. in the struggle. Like, yeah. I need a breath of fresh air, man. So uh-huh. so you know, thank you again for jumping on the show. And how can people, you know, contact you, follow you, if there are any other things mm-hmm. you're working on, you know, because for me, again, like I said, I've been following you, you know, Jason Goff, Lawrence Holmes. I mean, you know, especially like Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Man, God, like I said, I've been listening to 670 since I was a shorty, 11 years old, mm-hmm. and I hope one day to interview Lawrence as well, mm-hmm. and even Jason, when, you know, but like mm-hmm. the impact that they had on me. When you talk about what you were doing and like not being able to like get into trouble, and like mm-hmm. you know, like when I was at home and I could have found, I sat and listened to sports radio. I listened to 670, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is unorthodox for the other kids in my neighborhood living up in North, mm-hmm. or even when I moved to the South Side. But like, I listened to Me and Z Show, and I listened to mm-hmm. you know, all those things, and just to, and Dan Jiggets and them. And so like, to hear black men who love sports or as passionate about it as I am,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kept me on a straight and narrow for a minute. Like, I didn't really mm-hmm. want to do anything else. I just wanted to talk sports, listen to other people talk sports, watch my sports teams. And mm-hmm. so like, hats off to all y'all that really made us feel included. We heard it in y'all voices. We heard it in the scenarios and the anecdotes that y'all shared when y'all were talking behind the scenes. There were some things that we knew, like, oh, that's a brother. Like, you that's a brother. And so you yeah. want to check it out mm-hmm. again. And so, you know, sometimes you wouldn't have to even, because back then it wasn't like we was really running social media. So if I didn't catch right. your picture in a newspaper or see you in an ad, mm-hmm. I didn't know. You know what I mean? So, but I could tell by the way we talked, there were certain mm-hmm. you know, nuances in our language that and sometimes you may underestimate the impact, bro. But even at you as a producer and what you were doing, bro, mm-hmm. like then my hat's off to you, proverbially. And so thank you again for even just, again, answering my DMs when I was just like, bro, like, I was just shooting because shooters shoot. I was like, listen, see, homie going to hit me back. And so for you to hit me up and take the time, bro, like I said, God bless you and everything. More blessings to you and your family. I wish you nothing but just everything that you just said. And I wish your daughter is going to realize just the amazing man that is her dad, and the lineage of great men and upstanding men that she come from, man. So thank you so much for being on the show. So again, my point was, how can people follow you?
So yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at @TheTonyGill, on Twitter and Instagram and Threads, if that's your thing. I don't really go there, but you know, if that's your thing. Or you can email me, anthonygill56@gmail.com. Let's deal with two L's. And yeah, you know, you wanna see what I got going on, that's where you can find me.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, bro. Really appreciate it. So that's going to do it for this episode of My Black is Transnational. If you like what you heard, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and review the podcast. You can learn more about this podcast by visiting our website at blacktransnational.com. You can follow me, the host, at blacktransnational_ on Instagram, or you can follow the podcast at Black Transnational Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. So until next time, my name is Dr. Kalechi Bay Lamberts. My Black is Transnational, and I hope by the end of this, yours will be too. Peace. We'll be right back.